rises. Out on the back door fire escape, watching the city start to fade, with a mask covering up your face. You leaned in and said to me, my darling. Just lock me up, and when it's over, throw it out. We're living in this criminal place. Kids rob themselves of their own age. We all gotta pay the ultimate price. Just going out and feeling. Friends dying so young, I lost four of them in just under a year, and I wish that they were all still here. Strange how they just disappeared.
By Eamon McGraw. So Eamon's joining me tonight on Dangerfield on Indie 101.5. If you want to find Eamon online, you can find him at eamonmcgraw.ca. That's E-A-M-O-N, McGraw, M-C-G-R-A-T-H.ca. Or he's also on Instagram at Eamon_McGraw. So you recorded this album, so it came out in February. And you did you write this all during like the pandemic?
I did. It was kind of a way to sort of pass the time. What I thought was going to be, I mean, we all thought it was going to be like three shitty months. And then it just ended up stretching on and on and on and on and on. And what I did was I took the Trudeau bucks, like CERB, and I pretty much decided to treat it like arts funding and pretended that it was a recording grant, pretty much. Gave myself a quota of a song a day for as long as the initial stay-at-home order lasted. So from about whatever that was, March 12th to July 15th, when we were all misled and told that CERB was going to run out, which it didn't. And then I went and got a job. But in that time, in that window of time, I wrote and recorded a song a day.
Really?
So most of that stuff, well, I shouldn't say most of it. A lot of it ended up on Bells of Hope. The first kind of batch ended up on Bells of Hope, and then the other stuff is still ready to go and ready to be released. We're just kind of figuring out how to get that all going. So over the course of the year and a half that I wasn't touring, I recorded about 6 albums worth of new material, including this one. And then worked on a ton of other stuff for some other people. So all in all, between like producing other people's records, some collaborations that I did in isolation, and then a bunch of new music of my own, there's like 10 new records waiting to be released.
Wow, that's
just
incredible.
sitting in a Google Drive. Yeah.
And I was it's funny because I was like, you know, this has kind of been billed as like a bit of like a trilogy album almost, except I've been reading about it. So in 2018 you released Tantramar, in 2019 Guts.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that this is actually going to be like not a trilogy, but basically like all the like, I don't even know what to, an anthology, I guess.
yeah. Well, exactly. And so it's kind of like, there's going to be probably a bit of overlap between sort of closing the chapter of those 3 records that you just talked about that I put out on Saved by Vinyl. And then this new sort of, you know, post pandemic era of recordings that I've got that I'm just kind of waiting to see what to do with.
Wow.
And, so we're not sure what's going to happen with all that yet, but there is a lot of new music waiting to be released. And I mean, it's just about trying to figure out how to sort of organize it all and slot it into this new world of touring, which has been its own strange sort of reintroduction to reality. Because, I mean, it's just so different now. Touring is like, is very different. It's a parallel universe in some ways. It's like, it's really, really nice to be, obviously, it's really nice to be back working and doing, you know, what you put on this earth to do, but, it's just changed so much. I mean, it's a completely different world. It's like coming out of hibernation or like, you know, coming out of a cocoon or something. And then, you know, everybody's kind of pulling back the layers to see what's out there. And I mean, like a lot of people, myself included, have been really surprised by what we've seen. It's totally, totally wild.
You just got back from a tour. So you were just over in Europe for a spring tour, and you played, you know, Denmark, Austria, like Germany, Poland.
Well, I didn't go to Denmark in this run, but I mean, I do go to Copenhagen quite a bit.
Sorry, is that Germany? Like, does DE mean Germany?
yeah, no, it does. It means Deutschland. Yeah, okay. But Denmark. No. I play Copenhagen quite a bit, but I try to stagger it between like if I play Copenhagen 1 year, I don't play it the next kind of thing. But whatever, that's all boring.
Yeah.
But I just think that it's just changed. It's like, you know, you used to just kind of like, used to just show up and load your gear in and play a show and sell tickets. And that was it.
Well,
and now there's like, you still do that, but there's all this like added shit.
Right.
You know, and like, there's these like, you know, you people are like, for a while, I mean, it's kind of eased off now, but I mean, back in February after that winter lockdown, it was like, you know, everyone was like, trying to gauge the moral compass of playing shows. And so you had that going on. And then, you know, everything's so different in so many places that, you know, you sort of have to like keep up with the regional expectations towards dealing with this thing, because it's totally different sometimes between like city to city. You know, in Germany, there was one show in Dortmund where everybody that went, artists, audience included, had to get a test before they played. And then, you know, you go to Munich the next night and it's like a free for all.
Really?
And then you cross another international border and it's totally different there. And then, you know, like blah, blah, blah. So it's weird because it's like the, you know, like Europe's obviously like still really open. The free movement of people is still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're in the European Union. But I mean, like, I kind of think it's more similar now to what it used to be before the Euro, where you'd have to, you know, like change your money all the time. You've got to kind of keep up on that. Now it's like the public health, the equivalent of that is like the public health equivalent. So you're like constantly kind of trying to keep up to date on what's expected of you as an artist in different places.
Right.
And then of course, like social responses to all of this are so different depending on the city, that you might have like a really, really great turnout in one town and it's a Wednesday,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then might have a radically different turnout in, you know, 2 days later on a Saturday night in a college town that, you know, maybe used to be like a home run show is now,
right.
you know, kind of a question mark, because there's like this super, you know, progressive student population, really liberal minded or whatever, and they're just maybe not going out. It's also different between music genre, like metal and hardcore and EDM is just like full speed ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But then of course, you know, like political indie rock is like, those shows are just kind of empty.
Well, that's fascinating.
So that's been really interesting.
Yeah. And you actually did a really interesting post on Instagram recently, where you talked about the fact that you had to reschedule that tour 5 times. And so like, not only are you experiencing challenges when you're physically there, but there's that kind of constant like limbo between, is the show happening? Is it not happening? And then
100%.
Yeah. So the human, the cost of your time is like not returned. And are there any resources to help with this kind of stuff? Like, are there any are there any art services that help with that, or like advising on this, or is it all like one every man for himself kind of thing?
It feels a bit every man for himself.
Yeah.
Like over the shutdown, I mean, like during the last 2 years, like
yeah.
there was a lot of resources, like the Unison Fund.
Yes.
For example, was like incredibly, like those people are like patron saints. Like they should be given the Order of Canada. I mean, they're like,
wow.
They're heroes, you know? I mean, they were so helpful to so many people. And, you know, so they're a great example of like a really great support net that we had that was like unbelievable. It was like, mm-hmm. they helped so many people so often that it's like, I mean, you can't even describe how the good work they did. But I mean, no, the problem is that now it's like, you know, everything's full tilt. So all this, any support that there was is gone,
wow.
you know? And everybody touring right now, whether they know it or not, is doing unpaid work. Because if you're an agent booking a tour for a band, you've rescheduled a tour 5 times and you're finally getting paid out for,
mm-hmm.
Obviously for a fraction of the money that you've spent over the past 2 years working on it constantly. And then if you're an artist that's booking your own shows, I mean, you're doing double the unpaid work because you just rescheduled 2 years worth of shows to...
Right.
you know, to now. And then you've also got to go and play them. And the cost of touring has skyrocketed because, you know, like there's also been a fucking war that has completely transformed the global economy, especially in Europe.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, it's kind of fascinating is a good word, because, you know, I'm an artist that tours internationally, and I kind of I wear out, you know, one country or market or whatever on every album cycle, and then I put out a new record and then I just start from zero there. So I spent all last year touring Canada exclusively and finishing up all the gut stuff that got interrupted.
Yeah.
And then kind of also trying to simultaneously promote all this new music. So, you know, you get used to one rhythm doing that in one place, and then like always, you wear out your welcome, you run out of places to play, so you go somewhere else. And the added variables of international touring right now are just wild. not just because of the protocols and everything that are different in places, but also like, you know, I mean, gas in the Netherlands was €2.50 a liter. That's like $5.
Goodness. Well, and I read,
and it's all because of.
Yeah. And I read something about, I think it was like Donovan Woods or something. Someone posted like, well, there's two things. So one is that I'm sure advanced ticket sales are more challenging now because people are probably waiting to see if the show happens before they purchase it. And I think it Donovan Woods who said something like, you know, like there was this enormous cost. Like, yeah, it's like the upfront cost and there's no kind of safety net. So like, you don't even know when you get there, like if someone in the band, So
it's harder than it's ever been to literally put a show on the road.
Wow.
Like and the problem is that it's like, you know, even this conversation, right? Like I'm not speaking about this. I hope to God I don't sound like whiny or like
no. It's informative.
Honestly, kind of charity.
Yeah, it's informative because I think people need to hear.
I'm just trying to be
challenges.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and it's like, and see, the music industry is such a microcosm of wider, broader issues, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, the saying that, you know, we were the first to go and the last to return. It's very true, and it's like not just with the pandemic, but with economies in general. Like when there's a recession, you know, the biggest impact, first of all, is always felt on the art sector.
That's true.
A government always pulls art funding first, you know. People stop using what they see as disposable income to buy records and tickets. Like, you know, if someone's only got $60 before they get paid on Friday and they're going out to a show, they're probably going to buy beer before they buy a t-shirt.
Right.
So, like, all of those things. And so, what I'm trying to say when I talk about this stuff is not like, I'm not trying to like play the world's smallest violin and be like, woe is me. Everybody should be so feel so bad for musicians. It's like, I'm just trying to say that it's indicative of a bigger problem and it needs to be talked about and looked at and discussed because, you know, I don't think the gas prices are falling, for example. It's like, I think that we're in for a really huge shock. And I think that musicians, because they're on the forefront of it and on the front lines of it right now, we're witnessing huge changes in society and in the economy that other people might not see when they're working from home.
Right.
You know, like I was just in Poland 2 weekends ago. I was 500 kilometers from the Ukrainian border. Like that's like from here to Ottawa.
Wow.
You know, full scale war. So like, I felt the effects of that. It was like a big black cloud hanging over that culture.
Yeah.
And it's like very, very, very obvious when you're there, what's happening very close to you, you know? And yeah, I mean, every single musician you're watching play a show right now is working for free because they've put in all this time and energy not playing and working on making sure the show is as good as possible when they come back. And they don't see a dime of that until the settlement, which in some cases didn't happen for 2 years.
And how are you finding,
you know?
Are you finding, like, are you getting good reception from the people themselves? Because, you know, it's everyone is going through a hard time, and are you feeling like, you know, you're kind of giving these people some semblance of relief from there?
I definitely does feel like that. I mean, like, I think that anyone, you know, like you or me who had live music, you know, before 2020, like it was such a huge part of our lives.
Yes.
Like anyone like us is so happy,
right,
to be in the moment again, right?
It really is.
And I mean, like, and every single show I've done since last July, which is when I started touring again, I mean, I'm amazed that even now, like, it's like we're deep into, I mean, maybe, you know, I guess this is all subjective, but it's like, for me, it feels like we're like deep into recovery mode. Like, you know, I kind of like to think that we're sort of in the middle of the beginning of the end. Right.
Right.
And I mean, there's still people, like I've played 150 shows since July 8th last summer or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still people now that are like, this is the first show we've been to in 2 years.
Well, and you know? Honestly, Eamon, like I, like, you know me, I used to go to like 200 shows a year. And only in the past, I would say like month, have I kind of emerged, because for me, it was about like, it's just, everyone has their different comfort levels and personal reasons for why, but I know how much I used to contribute to, you know, the economy in that sense. And it's, I mean, but I got to say, it's good to be back. And on that note, listen, let's play another song of yours. And then we'll come back and we'll chat a little bit more. Let's play a song called Sarajevo. I'm talking tonight to Eamon McGraw, who joins me. We're playing songs off his latest release, Bells of Hope. And you're listening to that on Indie 101.5. So let's listen to Sarajevo and then we'll come back and we'll chat. That was Sarajevo by Eamon McGraw. If you like what you heard, you can find him online at eamonmcgraw.ca. That's Eamon, E-A-M-O-N. This album itself is a bit of a departure sonically, a little bit. So the song we just heard, it's got, I read a great quote where you just said you got sick of guitars. And so this is kind of it's described as American gospel, rhythms of American gospel and soul, but imagine us played through a blown speaker of psychedelia and noise. This also features drummer Danny Miles from July Talk and some horn players, Connor Newton and Kaylin Murphy. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. I like the horns.
Yeah. I just wanted to,
it's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to like really just, you know, change the rules of what you could do and still be called a songwriter. Like, you know, my worst nightmare, and a lot of people think that this is what I do, but like my worst nightmare is being like, is someone seeing like, you know, a poster with a, like, let's be honest, right? Like a disheveled white dude and automatically assuming that it's some sad bastard with cargo shorts and sandals in a coffee shop. Like, and I the problem is that it's like the solo kind of folk act is so misunderstood,
right?
And so misrepresented by so many people, and so many people think that they can do it when it's actually probably like the most difficult art form, you know. Mm-hmm. it's like everybody thinks they're a stand-up comedian and very few of those people are actually funny. And it's the same with everybody thinks that they're a folk singer and very few of those people actually play folk music.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, so my whole philosophy has been just like, I play acoustic guitar on the road,
right?
And I sing because it's economic, you know. It's like I everything I do is based on the Minutemen. Mm-hmm. And Black Flag and that whole school of punk rock. And mm-hmm. I do it because it makes the most sense. I want to have a really huge show that can fit in a duffel bag,
right?
You know, and so it's kind of coincidental that I tour that way. It's not like I'm like, I want to be thought of as this like sensitive folk singer. It's like I look up to songwriters like Mark Lanegan and David Bowie. Mm-hmm. And Lee Hazelwood and Graham Parsons and all these people that took songwriting as an opportunity to really bend the rules of what songwriting could be, you know. And like Bowie, my favorite Bowie record is Station to Station, and that's like a really strange like neo-gothic soul cocaine album.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some incredible songs on there, and it's the songs that make Bowie one of my favorite songwriters, you know. And I think that like, I think that that's sort of my mission is to kind of force people to reimagine what
right
a songwriter can do.
And so, you know? So if I ask you this, so what if you had like unlimited budget, like unlimited everything, how would you produce like your show? Like, would you do like full blown?
Oh, I mean, I'd have like, yeah, I'd have a 6-piece band. I mean, it's like, yeah. Like, you know, I play guitar and I have a drummer and a bass player. I play with a 3-piece when I play with a full band, because it's again, like it's the cheapest way to take a band on the road. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like when I see a band like Wilco play, I mean, I'm envious of those guys. They have like, you know, like they have it all. They have everything you'd need. I mean, I would love that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but you do have to, part of the art form of touring, in my opinion, is being really creative insofar as sort of making do with what you've got. Let's... And I don't really respect it necessarily when people knowingly go and take like an enormous hit on their show.
Right.
Like I think that it's like part of the creativity in being a touring working musician is making the show affordable for everybody, because that's the mission of music, is to include as many people as possible. And if you go bankrupt on on a tour, then that's going to be the last tour you do for 2 years. So all of a sudden there, you're counting out like all the, like 2 years, you know, potentially 2 years worth of audience members. I mean, that doesn't do anybody any good.
Right. And so like kind of creativity, you know. I mean, you, I read a great quote from you that said, you know, the world can often be a terrible place, but within it, there are tiny shards of incalculable beauty. Is that the inspiration behind the accompaniment of your album for the first 50 copies that were sold?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like, I wanted to have this kind of like, this like paradoxical darkness, you know, like beauty within darkness. It's like there's purple glitter in a Coke flap, you know?
Yeah. So
like a lot of the songs on the record were not just about, you know, the isolation felt during COVID and all that shit, but also like all of the kind of dreary things that happened, especially in Canada before COVID even. Like, I lost a ton of, you know, I've lost a ton of friends to overdoses. I mean, it's like, no one talked about how much of an epidemic that was.
Yeah.
And it's so for people in the music community, it was just like, you know, it was like, it's been like being in a fight with Mike Tyson or something. Like, yeah. You're like, you know, like so many members of the music community had suffered because of all that.
Yeah.
I mean, for years before COVID happened. And then after that happened, you know, we were forced to fall on our swords and abandon our ability to make sense of it all, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of an like this weird, ironic, sort of sarcastic nod to some of that lyrical content on the record. And yeah, I just love the image of like something really beautiful wrapped up in this package that we might associate with like,
right.
And you know, so the, just the to seedy underbelly of city.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't explain that properly when leading up to it, but for the first 50 copies that Eamon sold of Bells of Hope, people got a little dime bag filled with purple glitter, which was super cool. And so, Eamon, I want to play another track off your album. I want to play a song called Cannonball. And so this is kind of has more of the Graham Parsons, Lee Hazelwood type of influence to it. So let's play that, and we'll come back and we'll chat a bit more.
Yeah, perfect. Sounds good.
Thank you.
That was Cannonball by Eamon McGraw. Eamon joins me tonight on Dangerfield. It's been great chat so far, Eamon. It's super fascinating conversation. It's really interesting. It's really interesting to learn. It's really interesting just to like hear, you know, the passion that you have for wanting to make change in the industry and just kind of like letting people know like the inside of what's actually happening right now for musicians and the challenges that are happening. And so Eamon, who did the artwork for your album?
Eric Willis, who is the husband of Don Laux, who runs Straight by Vinyl.
Oh, cool.
And Eric's just been like involved in like since I started working with that label, he's been a really huge aspect of like the visual. Like he did the artwork for Tantramar.
Oh, okay.
And he did the artwork for all the single, like we released the record in singles starting in fall of 2020, so he did all that. And
how do you have someone do the artwork for your album, like do they listen to the album and then create it? Do they like, how do you partner? And what is that process like?
Well, yeah, in the case of this record, that's mm-hmm. absolutely what Eric did. Like we all got on the phone and we talked about images and like brainstormed shit. And there was like this idea to have we had some crazy ideas kicking around. Like Dawn was like, she wanted to take like the album cover for that record by the Highwaymen, where it's like Johnny yeah. Cash and Willie Nelson are all in the sky or whatever. Uh-huh. And it was going to be like Chai Pig, Gord Downey and Stompin' Tom. Or we had like this whole, like and then like, there was lots of crazy ideas that were going around, but then we just decided to like narrow it down to like one image, which was the mirror ball. And that's what Eric decided to sort of focus on, was just having this like a mirror ball, you know, like there's just something so hopeful about a mirror ball. And it's right. also just it's so tied into live music. Like it's like you know a mirror ball is just such a central, crucial point of any lighting rig, and like so many bands use them, and there's like every time you see one you're filled with joy, you know. so that was the idea for that. And then, because I mean, like really for like, honest to God, for this record, it's like, I know we've been talking about some heavy shit and the world's like a pretty heavy place right now, but I mean, I really do want to like leave people with a feeling of joy and optimism and hope when they hear mm-hmm. this record. And the reason why I talk about all this stuff isn't to bum people out, but like to be able to like articulate it properly so that we can find a solution together. You know,
right.
I mean, like until you identify the problem and like acknowledge it and talk about it in realistic terms and not talk about it in pessimistic terms or optimistic terms, but
right.
realistic terms, you know, until you do that, you can't deal with it properly.
Well, that's kind of why,
you know,
I was just going to say like, cause it kind of like in the work that I do, it's like, there's like, you know, like the band-aid solutions, like where you just kind of throw money at a problem. And then there's the systemic solutions. Right. And so the fact that,
well, exactly.
Yeah.
And totally. And with touring, it's like, you know, if we don't as musicians acknowledge that it's really tough to tour right now, we are never going to figure out how to do it properly again and
well,
how to adapt
like,
to it.
Totally. And even just like for me, like I don't use Spotify. Like I just have a moral rule where I don't use it.
Totally.
Because, like I like to pay
yeah.
for my music. Right. And so
right.
it's so hard. Like even just something like that, where like if everyone agrees, like just like, oh, anyways, I don't get me started on Spotify. I love Bandcamp.
No, but I mean, but that's a great example. That's a yeah. great example. It's like, here is like something wrong with the music industry. Like
right.
seriously, seriously fucking crazy, you
yeah.
know? And instead of just going like the bad reaction is to go like, oh, stop talking about it because it's bumming me out.
Mm-hmm.
The good reaction is to figure out an alternative to it.
Yeah.
And that's what's
And your Bandcamp just got bought by someone, I read, which is like, I like to use Bandcamp because I know that the majority of the, you know, they do the Bandcamp Fridays. I know the majority of the money hopefully goes to the musicians. But then if someone just bought it out, I can't remember who it was. And I'm like, okay, there goes that one now.
See, like the thing about all this stuff, like Bandcamp, Tidal, like Spotify, mm-hmm. whatever, just like every other music format that's ever existed, it will be replaced by something.
Yes.
You know, whether it's like the fucking 78 was replaced by the 45.
Yeah.
The 45 was replaced by the like blah, blah, blah. And there's just like, this is just another thing that, you know, will be replaced, hopefully for the better, because of conversations like this that we're having.
Right.
You know, and that's why it matters. It's like, don't talk about this stuff in a way of like admitting defeat, like be constructive and there's like, you know, find solutions. And then there's a certain amount of hope in doing that, I think, because otherwise you might as well just quit. You know, it's like, if you think it's easier to imagine no career in music than a career in music without Spotify, then I think the answer for you is to just stop playing.
Well, and the beauty of it all is Spotify doesn't exist without the artists, right? So it's like, it's a conscious decision.
Well, yeah.
So like,
and it's 100% in our hands. And just like touring is, right? Like, just like all the logistics and the practical aspects of touring and the ways to save money and how to do it smarter and where to go. All these things that you learn from like years of trial and error.
It's almost like also too like a union mentality, right? Because if you see what happens when people, you know, like if people boycott companies because of things that happen, correct? And so it's like, you know, there almost has to just be like, and for some reason, like the fact that they're ripping off musicians isn't enough to galvanize people. Like it'll have to take some other societal issue for people to quit it. Apparently it's so dumb.
Well, anyway. I mean, most of the people that come to see me play all over the world are people that have become a part of a community that they've had a hand in creating.
Right.
You know, like they're, believe it or not, you know, COVID might tell you otherwise. Spotify might tell you otherwise. There is still a really, 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 really tight knit underground scene of DIY punk rock minded people that continue to support music on a grassroots level, that are involved in the day to day working musicians and their lives, you know, and that's just not going to go away. And a lot of those people don't care about Spotify. They don't give a fuck about Spotify.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't get my music from Spotify. I never listen to Spotify.
No.
You know, I mean, so there is that unionist mentality. You're totally right. And it's not just about like, the musicians, but like the musicians and the audience, you know, in my line of work, it's like a collaborative thing, because, you know, I have made a career playing like intensely regionalized, localized shows and playing a lot of them and making an impact with audiences on a super small level. And I go to cities that no one plays.
Well, that classic example. So I'm just going to interrupt you for a sec, sorry, Eamon, but when you speak of that, like my sister travels to, what's it called? Like in Europe, that she had like a site. And so she saw that you were playing there. She's like, what's it called? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's in, let me just yell at her. Sharon, what's that town that Eamon plays in that you go to for work? Oh, Kassel. Okay. I was way off. Kassel.
Oh, Kassel. Yeah, I was there 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I've been playing Kassel for 15 years.
Yeah. And she was like, holy cow. Like, and that's like a classic example of like, and how do you even find these places? Is it just through like networks and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, through community, like through actually talking to people and like becoming like, you know, crossing the fourth wall between like fans and like people you actually have a connection with, like, you know, and like meeting musicians and working with musicians and like talking with people and like building actual relationships that, you know, transcend distance.
It was funny because when I was at Patti Smith, I was just in Chicago last week, and I went to the Patti Smith show by myself. So I was just kind of just talking to people I met, and I was like, oh, I'm from Canada. And this guy and his sister were there, and they're like, he's like, oh, like I used to play Hamilton. And he was in the punk rock community. I can't remember the name of his band. I'll have to look it up. But yeah, so it's kind of like Hamilton is that for like, you know, the punk rock community a little bit too. So I just found that interesting. Like
100%. Yeah, I mean, so is Hoboken in New Jersey, like across the river. But like a lot of those bands would play there too. And it's like, you know, I mean, the Replacements from Minneapolis, like the most like quote unquote like unpunk city at the time. But it's like, actually, that's not true at all. There was a really vibrant community of artists there, and like this is what I kind of consider folk music to be, is like the priority being, you know, instead of like, oh, I need to represent my record as accurately sonically as possible. Mm-hmm. It's like my priority ahead of that is to put out the greatest record I can, and to take that record to vibrant arts communities that exist that go under the radar of people in places like New York or Toronto or LA.
Right.
You know, and because they exist all over the world and no one pays attention to them. And that's where all the people are, you know? I mean, that's where the best shows are. That's where the folks are, for lack of a better word, you know? So, like, that's the way I've always operated. And it's because of, you know, towns like Castle or, you know, Cambridge, Ontario, or, like, places that people don't even know exist on a map, even in their own country. It's like, there's a lot of people there, and they love music, and they deserve to hear it. And it's really that people prioritize, you know, the quality of life of audience members in bigger cities, just because the cities happen to be bigger. That's insane to me.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I mean, that to me is folk music. And that to me is why I've been able to keep touring so much, because I'm not afraid to play in any town.
Well, and also, you know, what's interesting too, and then there's also the flip side too, because it's funny, like there's certain, like, so for example, the Stones exhibit was just, so I went to the Stones exhibit in Chicago like a couple of years ago, and it's basically like all their kind of old, like, you know, they rebuild the apartment that they live in. Like, they have all the, it's like a retrospective kind of thing. And they had it in Chicago, and then they had it in Kitchener this year. And I think, like, probably one of two reasons, like, it's either the reason that you're saying it should go to where people are, but with that much money, like, or is it that it's just cheaper to do it there? Who knows? But like, on the flip, it is driving the economy to those places. So that I kind of like that about it. But
absolutely. And as cities like Toronto get more expensive,
yeah,
it's going to become easier and easier and easier to be a working musician. And it's more and more important to play those places as the price of gas goes up.
That's so true.
You know, because you, it's really, really hard to have like a profitable tour if you're driving 8 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and this is what I mean. There's like all this, like, I'm not a doomsayer. I'm just like, this is what I've noticed. This is my like journalistic objective perspective on what it's like to be a musician right now. Like, I can't afford to go to Europe and only play Hamburg, Berlin, Munich, and Köln.
Yeah.
But I have to play other places, because I want to play those places. I want to go there. I want to go to Castle.
Yeah.
You know?
And speaking of journalistic, Eamon, so you've written two books. So in 2020, you released the book, Here Goes Nothing. And then you also have the Berlin, is it worse? Is that how you spell Warsaw?
That's the
proper spelling.
The German, and I think it's the German word for Warsaw. It's Warsaw.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
definitely it's Polish. Polish say Warsaw. Yeah.
And are you working on any? Are you writing? Are you always writing? Or like, tell me a little bit more about what's ahead for you in that respect.
Yeah, I mean, I've been working on something that my editors looked at. I mean, I'm not really sure what's going to happen with it, but I do have a meeting coming up, and
cool.
I try to sort of chip away on something like that.
Do you write on a computer? Or do you write in a journal?
I mean, like both of those books, like Berlin Warsaw Express and Here Goes Nothing, were both initially written by hand, and then and then transcribed, and then really heavily edited from there.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it's like, it's, that's the thing, is that the conditions have to be pretty, you know, pretty perfect for me to write something. And like, I used to write on tour all the time. I would just do it in the back seat or on the train or whatever, but I do all my own driving now, so it's a little tougher for me to pull it off. So now I just, like, whenever the lightning strikes, I try to just make sure that I'm ready. But it's fewer and far between as I get older. But
right. Yeah. And so for those that I haven't updated in the past little bit. We're listening to Eamon McGraw, a conversation with him tonight on Dangerfield. If you'd like to find more of his music, you can find him at Eamon McGraw, Eamon McGraw.ca, or Instagram.com/ Eamon _McGraw. Let's play another song of yours, Eamon. Let's play April. Do you want to play April or Sparkle and Bleed?
Yeah, play April. That's
okay, let's play April. Play April and then we'll come back. We'll chat.
Thank you.
That was April by Eamon McGraw, who joins me tonight on Dangerfield. So Eamon, you've got some shows coming up, and you're going to Alberta. So for those listening on the West Coast, Eamon is May 25th, Banff, 26th, Edmonton, 27th, Lethbridge, 28th, Wayne, Alberta, and 29th, Red Deer, Alberta. And so, for the song April that we just heard, tell us a little bit about what that song was about.
Just about the kind of melancholic change in season, I guess. I mean, it's like there's just that kind of gloomy optimism in springtime, like when everything's kind of like the snow's all melted, but you're waiting for that big rain to come and like wash all the dirt away. There's that like that purgatory.
It's the day after my birthday, Eamon, so it's always a little gloomy for me too.
Oh, yeah. You're so excited about everything coming up, but at the same time, it's like, you know, you're like, you're all out of whack. It was just trying to channel that feeling.
Listen, Eamon, we're coming up on time here, but I just wanted to say that like that went by way too fast. But that was such a fascinating conversation. Like, I'm happy that I'm sad for the listeners that we didn't get to play more of your music, but I'm happy for the listeners that they got to hear this important conversation. So you're doing great work.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk.
Yeah, super proud of you. And I hope to see you maybe tomorrow night. Yeah. Okay. So
yeah, and I owe you a shirt.
I'm excited for my shirt. Yeah, bring that out. Okay. Okay, so take care. And again, for those who want to find Eamon, you can find him at eamonmcgraw.ca. So you have a great night, okay?
Right on. Thanks, Mary.
Bye-bye.